Mrs. Eddy is reported to have announced that, quote, anything divinely true is humanly demonstrable, but is not humanly true until humanly demonstrated. The divine is expressed as the true likeness, but not as a flesh and bones matter body. While Jesus and Mrs. Eddy solved for themselves the problem of mortal mind's impositions or inflictions, mortal mind's tricks that result in all the discord that flesh is heir to, they were both totally motivated by love for suffering humanity. Of Jesus, Mrs. Eddy writes, it would be a species of infidelity to believe that so great a work as the Messiah's was done for himself or for God, who needed no help from Jesus' example to preserve the eternal harmony. This statement is also true of Mrs. Eddy, but mortals did need this help. A belief of personal magnanimity was never the principle governing the careers of Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy. Rather, it was the indivisible divine principle love, manifesting itself as Christ Jesus and Christian Science. This divine principle enforced obedience to itself, to principle, which is universal and impartial. I think the greatness of Mrs. Eddy was that she was not content with her own healing. That was only the beginning of her search to find and understand the science of mind healing, so that she could give it to all mankind. The net result of Jesus' earthly career was a sublime example he set in demonstrating that it is possible to work out of the impositions, the inflictions, of animal magnetism, that it is possible for mortals to awaken from the deep hypnotic sleep imposed on Adam by the Lord God Jehovah. Jesus did it. The Adam Dream of Incompleteness. What specifically was suggested to Adam during the hypnotic sleep imposed upon his consciousness? It was the belief of sex. In this allegory, Adam stands for error. He was made to believe a lie, the lie that he had broken away from his true identity as spirit, in which he was whole, undivided from his womanhood, and that he was now, quote, revolving in an orbit of his own. In his spiritual original state, he was complete, since God is individual mind. Infinite good was therefore his consciousness. Remember, the eternal Elohim includes the forever universe, and what the eternal Elohim images forth is as total, entire, and perfect as itself. It never images itself forth as manhood divided from womanhood. I believe Mrs. Eddy answered this in Science of Man. She states, God never created error, but all that worketh a lie was made after the creation of God, and fashioned after this sort, a belief of pleasure in matter. This led to sexual intercourse, and this belief of man and woman mingling brought forth another belief, and this was that man was a creator, and this error brought sin, sickness, and death. Belief has its own images of thought and calls them identities, but they are not. An idea of God is something embraced in God. A belief has no identity. Unquote. The deep sleep which the Lord God Jehovah caused to fall upon Adam was the parent of all human discord, the parent of all that which robbed man of dominion and power. Quote, so that man becomes the most absolutely weak and inharmonious creature in the universe, unquote. Science teaches us we are mind, spirit, soul, and therefore all creation is divinely mental and spiritual. It is the outgrowth, the emanation of mind's infinite self-containment and immortal wisdom. Science teaches mind is its own great cause and effect. That mind is our mind. There is only one mind. There is no other mind in actuality that can create a mortal physical body, which is nothing more than a sensuous human concept, an illusion, like a sleep dream from which we must awaken ourselves. As the ability to do abstract or conceptual thinking and analysis increases, and the standpoint of the first edition that we are spirit and spirit is God is more generally understood and accepted, humanity will experience a tremendous change of viewpoint with potentially unlimited power for good in its wake. Our urgent work is to get self out of the way. Then the only operator is divine principle. This puts the government where in actuality it is. Mrs. Eddy gave her students the following little exercise to help them develop spiritual sense. Quote, "Just go alone. Close your eyes, and in the depths of your consciousness, say over and over again, I am, I am, I am, I am. Your whole being will be filled with the sense of power to overcome, the power to accomplish, the power to do all things." Unquote. The power to overcome, the power to accomplish, the power to do all things has come to us through Mary Baker's discovery of science. The power was always there. But until Mrs. Eddy's teaching explained the word, Christ, Christianity, humanity did not know of this power. When Mrs. Eddy told her students to declare from the depths of their consciousness, "I am, I am," she was in effect telling them that they must reckon themselves principle, as she makes clear in the first edition. When understanding reigns, we find we are principle. This realization fills our whole being with a sense of power to overcome, the power to accomplish, to do all things. When we realize we are principle, we don't pray to the principle and ask it to help us any more than we stand in front of the blackboard and implore the principle of mathematics to help us or to solve the problem for us. We must remember that each one expresses in a unique way the whole of God, mind, principle. Every idea is as infinite and all-powerful as the whole, as principle itself. There can never be a time or place when principle, mind, spirit could exist without its idea, since principle and its idea is one. This is why Jesus could say, "I and the Father, principle, are one. He that hath seen me hath seen the Father, infinite good." We do not understand Mrs. Eddy's teaching unless we see that one infinite principle can express itself only as one infinite, indivisible idea. This is the reason you are always alone with your own being and with the reality of things, and why you therefore, quote, "have sovereign power to think and act rightly," as she tells us in prose works. Mrs. Eddy, in her 1901 poem, wrote, "Thou God-crowned patient century, thine hour has come." And in the textbook she wrote, "The earth will help the woman." Unquote. Woman is a symbol for science, which includes manhood, which in turn is a symbol for Christianity. What did Mrs. Eddy envision for the end of this century? Did she foresee there would be a general glimpsing of our oneness with principle, bringing with it the sense of power to overcome, the power to accomplish, the power to do all things? Did she foresee a general glimpsing of the great truth that the woman, science, is the real you? Did she foresee a general glimpsing by humanity that the real you is actually that angel standing in the sun? See the glossary definition of sun. That angel standing in the sun is you, and is telling you that you include every manhood and womanhood quality of divine principle. And when you recognize that you are the I am, the principle, having every manhood and every womanhood quality, your whole being will be filled with a sense of the power to overcome, the power to accomplish, the power to do all things. Woman, science, is a symbol for the truth that each idea is the whole of infinite good, expressed in a unique way. I would like to add that Adam is a belief and not a believer. The Adam belief is the belief that something can be created out of nothing. The name Adam represents a false supposition that life has beginning and end, that the infinite enters the finite. Unquote. Mortals are the Adam dreamers. The basic difference between the first and second records of creation is that in the first record, everything proceeds out of the one mind. So it is the unfoldment of the divine mind, whereas the Adam allegory starts with lack. It has to first create an entity which can then experience good and evil. From this false premise of nothingness becoming something, all errors get worse and worse. The folly of giving identity to sin. It seems the whole of error rests on the assumption that there is another power of being other than the one power of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, and its expression, operating through the fourfold calculus of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. Mrs. Eddy tells us, sin was and is the lying supposition that life, substance, and intelligence are both material and spiritual, and are in the so-called matter-body. The first iniquitous manifestation of sin was affinity. The finite was self-arrayed against the infinite, the mortal against immortality, and a sinner was the antipode of God. The sinner created neither himself nor sin, but sin created the sinner, that is, error made its man mortal, and this mortal was the image and likeness of evil, not of good. Therefore the lie was and is collective as well as individual. It was in no way contingent upon Adam's thought, but supposititiously self-created. Unquote. Jesus called this lying supposition that life and intelligence are in a matter body a murderer from the beginning. The first record of creation shows the spontaneous self-manifestation of the infinite one. There is no struggle to create. The divine principle natively manifests its own infinitude. Then, to reinforce that first record, we have the upside-down second record to show what being is not. If we don't attribute identity to error, we are not left with a state of lack that has to be changed. We must know that there isn't a we that has to be changed. Attributing identity to error makes it harder to expel. Therefore, it's important to remember that the Adam dream account only tells us what is not. Knowing this takes the starch out of the theological personification of error, which is what the Adam story is. We must see there is no identity to anything except as it is identified with mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. The whole point of her system is that it progressively enlarges the understanding that the I is principle and not person. And because Christian Science is a system that can be learned by anyone who is interested and dedicated, Mrs. Eddy wrote, quote, "If the Bible and my work, Science and Health, had their rightful place in schools of learning, they would revolutionize the world by advancing the kingdom of Christ." And she added, "It requires sacrifice, struggle, prayer, and watchfulness to understand what these volumes teach, because they involve divine science with fixed principle, a given rule, and unmistakable proof." Unquote. A monumental amount of dedicated study has gone into Mary Baker Eddy's textbook since Mr. Durley, in 1937, discovered in it, quote, "the system she denominated Christian Science." Unquote. This was a discovery Mrs. Eddy knew the student would make in due time, and this better understanding of the system has made a good start in thinning out the belief of persons and material personality. The theological interpretation of the Adam creation, depicting man as physical and dependent upon his physical organization, is the Pandora box from which all evil has sprung. In this Adam dream, matter takes divine power into its own hands, and through paganism and lust, claims to be a creator. In this dream state, man that is born of a woman is a few days and full of trouble. But there are signs all around us that the elusive nature of matter is being discerned, at least by the world's leading physicists, who are glimpsing Mrs. Eddy's point of view and gradually coming into line with it. In due time, what they are seeing will become common knowledge, just as the round earth theory, once held by only a very few, has today become common knowledge. Mrs. Eddy had divine and absolute faith in the immortality of her teaching, for the simple reason that God had dictated it. Lula Blackman recorded, quote, "Mrs. Eddy's faith in the correctness of her interpretation of divine science, when all the world doubted, transcended human belief and revealed, in the words of Science and Health, a conscious, constant capacity to understand God." Unquote. Mrs. Eddy spoke to the whole human consciousness, and all true consciousness heard her. When God speaks, God hears. As our next reference teaches, it is only the belief of personal sense that shuts out the communication of soul. Quote, "But to those buried in the belief of life in matter, and insisting that we see alone with eyes, and hear with ears, and feel through nerves, Jesus said, 'Having eyes ye see not, and ears ye hear not, that ye might understand and be converted, and I might heal you.'" Their belief of personal sense of life in matter shut out the communications of soul. Hence his saying, "Ye cannot serve two masters." Unquote. Only when we are not serving two masters are we whole, undivided from God, and in communication with soul. The synonym soul has been explained before, but since it is used so often in this first edition, could we review once more at this point what soul is, does, and deals with? First, since there is only one God, one soul, there cannot be many souls. The first edition tells us we are soul. Therefore, we are imbued with all souls' characteristics. In her writings, Mrs. Eddy characterizes the synonym soul as spiritual understanding and spiritual sense. In the human, soul sense is manifested as willingness to reform, to change, to be translated to ever higher levels of thought. Soul is further characterized as having that transforming power necessary to handle, to master erroneous situations and translate them back into line with soul's divine incorporeal self. Soul enforces the changes necessary to bring human character in line with the divine character of soul. Soul bestows unchanging identity on everything mind creates, and which spirit understands to be the only reality. Other characteristics that Mrs. Eddy uses to bring out the nature of soul are balance, bliss, beauty, capacity, constancy, definiteness, freedom, identity, joy, resurrection. Soul rebukes, reforms, and reverses error. Soul is safety. It satisfies, is sinless, tangible, unconfined. Our work is to accept that we are soul and have the unchangeable, sinless nature of soul. Soul, spiritual sense, manifests itself as man's soul, infinitely individualized, but always remaining the whole of soul. Soul is all-powerful, not only in soul's realm, but also in the realm of physical sense testimony, where it translates the false testimony of the physical senses back into spiritual sense, where all is always intact. Like only sees like, and that's why we have to learn the synonyms and the ideas constituting them. Then God sees God, mind sees mind, spirit sees spirit, soul sees soul, etc. Later, in this first edition, Mrs. Eddy explains that man is the body of God. Namely, man epitomizes the universe and is the body of God. God's laws and their intelligent and harmonious action constitute man's individuality in the science of soul, unquote. This thought body of God, meaning God's laws and their harmonious and intelligent action, is not divided. When you look in the mirror, you see the whole image. It is not divided. Generic man is God. It is that state where no divisions exist. Generic man means that state where each reflects the undivided whole. Generic man, as stated previously, is another name for the coincidence of the divine principle and the divine idea. For this reason, Mrs. Eddy could write not only the Christian Scientist is alone with his own being and with the reality of things, but also that you, as the Christian Scientist, possess sovereign power to think and act rightly. Even the sleep dream partially illustrates this aloneness, in that you are always alone with all you are aware of in the dream. You dream you are in a crowded convention. Each attendee has his own personality as he expresses his opinion. But when you wake up, you realize it was only your mind that was involved. Since God is individual mind, it would logically follow that you, that I, reflect the undivided whole. The quotation continues by explaining, "This one mind and its individuality comprise the elements of all forms and individualities, and prophesy the nature and stature of Christ, the ideal man." Unquote. With God as individual mind, as the only mind of man, we can grasp even the infinite idea. That is, we can learn our true identity as spirit, which is wholly good, changelessly satisfied and serene. We can learn this from Jesus' demonstration, as our next reference will show. The demonstration Jesus gave of God did for the world more than a problem wrought and explained in mathematics does for the learner. It taught the human race how to demonstrate aright the principle that is God. And if this demonstration had been understood, man would have reached the example of Jesus and solved his being harmoniously ere this. The personal belief of God that holds spirit person instead of principle, making soul intelligent matter, possessing all the tyranny and passion a belief of life in matter manifests, was the very error that crucified Jesus, and that today is shutting out the reign of harmony. Jesus knew there was but one God, hence that man's intelligence was God, and not man, principle, and not person. Therefore, said he, I and my Father are one. And because of this scientific statement and the demonstration it brought with it, the rulers cried out, Crucify him! He maketh himself as God. And what further witness need we against him? Unquote. Our whole struggle is to rid ourselves of error, of the veil hiding the truth that man's only intelligence is God. We must get rid of any sense of struggle. We must not attribute identity to error, since that enhances its tenacity. Mrs. Eddy says, when she saw that because life God lived, she lived, she, quote, awoke from the dream of spirit in the flesh, so far as to take the side of spirit, and strove to cease her warfare. Also, she says, the first spontaneous motion of truth and love, acting through Christian Science, on my roused consciousness, banished at once and forever the fundamental error of faith in things material. For this trust is the unseen sin, the unknown foe, the heart's untamed desire which breaks the divine commandments. Alice Orgain illuminates this struggle to set man free in her explanation concerning the change Mrs. Eddy made in the first stanza of her poem Christ and Christmas from "O'er the dark night of chaos shone one lone brave star" to "O'er the grim night," unquote. Webster defines dark as destitute of moral or spiritual light, and defines grim as savage, merciless, fierce, and relentless. Thus dark suggests the chaos and darkness upon the face of the deep in the second verse of the first chapter of Genesis before the Spirit of God moved upon it. On the other hand, grim describes the struggle of light with darkness in the human consciousness, after God said, "Let there be light." This was the first divine command given to the human consciousness, and it started the grim struggle of manhood, meaning humanity, to objectively demonstrate the light of womanhood, which existed subjectively, before the command was necessary. Thus, when Mrs. Eddy had previously used "o'er the dark night" instead of "o'er the grim night," woman did not give credit to the struggle of manhood, typing Christianity, that changed darkness into grim struggle. In confirmation of the significance of this change, Mrs. Eddy simultaneously added the glossary of Christ and Christmas, containing the scriptural texts for the pictures, the scriptures recording the struggle of manhood. See Angelic Overtures of Christ and Christmas. That explanation graphically summarizes this chapter 2 of the first edition, the struggle to lay down the mortal, the misconception that masks reality. We must tell the truth concerning sin. Note how in this next reference she again explains that all the discords of earth proceed from false conceptions of God and man. Quote, "The mind of intelligence understands and never believes, and the body of intelligence is spiritual, not material, idea and not substance. It is the reflex shadow of soul, even man that is the image and likeness of God. What besides this we name man is but a belief and error, dust to dust. Hereby we learn a lie is all the Satan there is, and marking its footsteps, we gain this proof. All the discords of earth proceed from false conceptions of God and man. We must tell the truth concerning sin and sinners because of the moral necessity not to cover iniquity." Unquote. She exposes Satan as nothing more than a lie. But the more truth you bring, the more error is stirred by it, until the final conquest on the side of right. Only through the self-renunciation of all that constitutes a so-called material man can spiritual identity be achieved. In our next reference, Mrs. Eddy indicates Jesus was no different from us except in his fuller understanding of reality. Quote, "He who was God and not in man, was no respecter of persons, therefore claimed no personal worship. They to whom he had given the highest proofs of the science of being misinterpreted them, and said deridingly, 'He maketh himself as God.'" Unquote. When Mrs. Eddy here and elsewhere in the text states, "He who was God," she is, of course, speaking from an entirely different point of view than other religions, which teach erroneously that the human personality named Jesus was God, and that the Virgin Mary was therefore the mother of God. Mrs. Eddy knew it was the mind of Jesus that was God. He demonstrated the mind of Christ, the mind of God. Jesus, she says, was the highest human corporeal concept of the divine idea. The human Jesus was an expression of the divine principle, just as 2 × 2 = 4 is the expression of the mathematical principle. The I and its idea is one. In science, principle includes its idea. The I doesn't belong to somebody or something up in the clouds, something apart from our consciousness that has to be entreated or prayed to. This I is your true divine I. It is my I that I am. Mrs. Eddy urged her household, quote, realize for yourself that love and truth and action on your part, for truth does not work for you unless you work, will give you the victory. In Miss Laney's writing, she tells us, the hour has struck for the Christian Scientists to do their own work. We are asked, who would stand before a blackboard and pray the principle of mathematics to solve the problem? The odyssey of man through time shows that as you work, the ages win. Humanity must work out of this dream of life in matter. Time is neutral and doesn't change, but courage, intelligence, God-inspired leadership, and the willingness to work hard enough do bring change and progress. Mrs. Eddy reminds us that the conscientious are successful. They work on through evil and through good report to the achievement of good. We must not flee before the enemy. Remember, he has sounded forth the trumpet that shall never call retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Julia Ward Howe. Obey this call. Go, if you must, to the dungeon or the scaffold, but take not back the words of truth, was Mrs. Eddy's rallying cry in her Chicago address. Stand up for principle. As students work from their home, summits, divine consciousness, they are lights that cannot be hid, and the time to work is now. Striking for higher ground may bring persecution and pain, but the faithful are strong enough to overcome the pain and keep moving onward. I have often been helped by Mrs. Eddy's counsel, never ask another to help you. As sure as you do, you cripple yourself. At another time, regarding a shock or disappointment, she said, unless you go right on as though nothing had happened, you are not watching with God. Even if you fall down and break a leg, get right up and declare, the experience did me good, she's reported to have told a student. This counsel has helped me many times to overcome seeming hurt or hardship. Referring to our last first edition reference, he maketh himself as God, that is exactly what Jesus did do and demonstrate, but not in their meaning. He said, I and the Father are one. He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. He was referring to his God consciousness, his Christ mind. Our next reference shows how Jesus, our divine exemplar, worked on through the crossfire and crosswinds his teaching evoked, and in spite of his knowledge that a Gethsemane and the cross awaited him, he never swerved from his goal to establish the proof that he was Christ and Christ is God. Think of the spiritual dominion this involved. Here was Jesus, faced with death on the cross and the cruel treatment that led up to it. Yet he was able to abide in the calculus of spirit and truth, able to keep his divine composure. With the exception of the lone disciple and a few women, he was deserted, forsaken by all whom he had blessed. And yet, what supreme command over mortal mind suggestions he exercised. Truly he showed mortals the power of God, of the Christ mind that he claimed as his mind. We stand in awe before such dominion. Quote, we must understand God to demonstrate truth. Jesus of Nazareth, the fittest teacher of mankind, possessed this understanding, but the scorning rabbi, the rival Pharisee, Gethsemane and the cross were ready to devour him. Our Master meekly, and yet as a victor, bore the mockery of his self-conscious God-being and established the proof that he was Christ and that Christ is God, the soul and life of man.
The ongoing example of Mrs. Eddy's fortitude. What other subjects are prominently featured in this part of her chapter 2? There continues to be much concerning the treatment Jesus received. For instance, quote, "Anomalous though it seems, I have no doubt that Jesus was shunned and deemed a bad man at the period of his public labors by all save the few unpretentious ones whose Christianity enabled them to understand him. This was the cup drank to the dregs by our Master. He also spake of those who followed him drinking this very cup, which must indeed be the case if they are in advance of the public sentiment." Unquote. We know Mrs. Eddy did indeed drink this very cup, that in fact she suffered from the dismal withering blasts of ingratitude and disdain meted out by apostatizing students as well as by other harsh critics of her day. The Christian Science Journal of July 1899 contains a poem which has a deeply moving effect on the reader when he knows the painful circumstances, the poignant regrets for the loss of promising students which led to its writing. The poem is entitled Signs of the Heart. It was a desperate, crucial hour for the cause, characterized by the open working of animal magnetism.